Hello, curiosity seekers. Welcome to Dissecting Medical History. I'm Ange. I'm a travel nurse, medical history enthusiast, and your host. If you're looking for a storytelling formatted podcast with fun and fascinating topics on history and bios, then you are in the right spot. Please note this is not in any way medical advice. If you have anything that's ever discussed in any of the podcast episodes, please seek medical attention. Now, let's get this story started.
My only goal right now is to not be as spazzy as I was last time.
Okay, well, I'll cut that part out because we're already recording.
Okay, excellent.
I'm like,
Is she having a breakdown at the beginning of the podcast?
I'm like so going to put that in the bloopers episode. Hello, welcome back to Dissecting Medical History. I am with my friend again, Viv.
Hi.
Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year. Yeah. It's the 29th, right?
This episode. This episode's airing on New Year's.
Oh, okay. Eve. Happy New Year.
That's my little horn. Okay. Yes, Happy New Year. So pretend. So today we're going to talk about mental health. And I feel like that's a subject that we've been talking about for a little while now. And the last episode we did was Nellie, right? Nellie Bly, the 10 Days in a Madhouse.
Yeah.
We did that episode a couple weeks ago. And I've been studying lobotomy and Bellevue. Bellevue is a mental institute here in the United States. And today I was going to just do an episode on a little history of mental health and how it was perceived in the old days. And then I was going to tell a story about someone that is wealthy who had mental health issues that also had a lobotomy. So she's on the other spectrum. So I was going to talk about the history and how some of the patients were treated. Obviously, these things are a little bit worse than what Nellie Bly talked about in her expose. Her expose was a little bit tame. And I mean, the worst thing that happened was they were telling her stories about how they were beaten and stuff. But I'll talk a little bit more about some of the more horrific treatments that were done. And then I'll tell the story about the rich lady. And before we do that, I want to tell a story. Just as a tiny, teeny, tiny story about this woman named Philippa Ashford. She was a mentor of mine during nursing school. And she was my clinical instructor for my psychiatric clinical rotation. And I was pretty lucky because I got to do a rotation in a private facility. It's much different than the hospital setting where you get like the Queen of Africa. I got the Queen of Africa one time in one of the county hospitals. And so you get some pretty interesting cases, but in this facility, the cases were more of like drug addiction or bipolar disorders or like more of the personality disorders rather than like the homeless that come in with disorders that have been untreated for a long time. Okay. Anyway, it was a private facility. And so it's a pretty interesting rotation. But through the semester, she tried to get me into the field of psychiatric nursing. And even though psychology was one of my minors and I really love the subject, I would not make a good psychiatric nurse. I'm easily manipulated by patients. I believe everything they say. Oh. Like, oh, you are the Queen of Africa. I know. And I swore.
Oh, wait. I really thought it was. Are you talking to, like, you're saying that it was not a queen
Africa? She, in her head, she was.
Oh, my gosh. See, okay. So I couldn't be a psychiatric nurse either. Cause I told her. Okay, I'll take your word for it. All right. That's weird. In a county hospital?
Yeah. Right. She ended up in Houston. No, there's a lot of countries in Africa, so I couldn't imagine that she was the queen of all of them. But no, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
But no, she was, yeah, she thought she was the queen of the whole continent.
Wow.
No, she really wasn't, though.
I mean, how do we know? Okay, this is why. It's also why I would like be admitted if I was a psychiatric nurse. They're like, wow, she's really talking to the patients and telling them that, yeah, what if they are Jesus?
Yeah.
Like,
there was some interesting. There's, I mean, over the years we've had a lot of interesting cases, but I'll never forget her. She was my very first one, my very first psych patient.
Okay,
and that was before. That was actually before my psych rotation. That was in the county hospital in the like a med surge ward. I think she had a tumor or something in her belly, or I don't remember. I just remember her telling me she was the queen. Like, oh, that's awesome. I didn't believe her like you just believed, but okay, back to my story. Mm-hmm. I tried to tell her that I would not make a good psychiatric nurse because I really did swear that I had every mental or behavioral disorder that we studied. But she was really sweet, and I remember she gave me her card and she gave me a great recommendation letter, because that was, I think, our last semester and we were starting to look for jobs and we were starting to get our resumes ready. And she told me to keep in touch with her even if I didn't go into the field. And I really wish I had, but almost a year ago, it'd be just a few minutes after midnight on January 1st of 2020, the year that'll probably go down in our known history as the worst year ever, Miss Ashford went outside her house to join in a celebratory New Year's Eve firework with her family. And a few minutes after midnight, the last thing she said was she thought she got shot. She got hit with a celebratory stray bullet that someone had shot up in the air, and she died.
Wow.
So it was really sad. Shooting off guns in Texas is something that is pretty common. However, you know, people forget that what goes up must come down. Mm-hmm. And of course, in this regard, it came down and killed a very special person that we could have used this year. She was, you know, a psych nurse that probably really could have been important this year.
Yeah.
So sorry. It's really, I mean, she was such a good person, and it's such a senseless death. And I just want to tell people, the listeners, that please don't shoot guns when there's a 4th of July or New Year's Eve, because it could hurt someone. They don't even know. That person who shot that gun probably will never know that they killed a nurse, that they shot that gun up in the air thinking that, you know, this is going to be the best year ever. You ring in the new year. And hopefully, you know, God didn't smite them down with COVID, but, but you know what I mean? Like, people don't know. People don't know when they do these things, what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I just wanted to put that PSA out there. And so don't make it a bad year for someone else. So, okay. We're going to do a mental health episode. Psychiatry as a field. That didn't come around until the 1800s. So It's a new field still, and there's so much still to learn from it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until 1879 that it actually became a name. Like, that was, there was no name for psychology before. So Willem Wundt was credited for the first psychology laboratory and became an academic discipline, and that was in Germany. A little bit before Freud's time. But that, it's amazing to me that as a field, it wasn't named, it wasn't studied, not extensively until the 1800s.
Yeah, I think I think it's like a luxury to be able to understand things. That's another thing. It's like it couldn't have been such a field until other things were taken care of, until people started to realize that, oh, now that we have stuff opened up, or we're not all working on the same thing, or we're not all having to do physical labor, we can go into the thinking area, like, especially like if you're not worried about, like, so agriculturally, if your food is developing, like, that's when we see more improvements on taking care of other people. Like, once you can take care of yourself, then you can think about taking care of other people, because in turn, if you take care of other people, then you're taking care okay. of yourself too.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. Well, I mean, for a long time, I think even not soon before this, they thought that the liver was kind of the main organ, instead of like the heart being the organ that pumped the blood. They thought it came from the liver. So, mm-hmm. I mean, things are developing further and further as they're able to do more research. And like in Hippocrates' time, he wasn't allowed by law to do any type of autopsy or any type of surgery. They weren't allowed to do that. So you can't really learn if you're not allowed to learn from mm-hmm. things. So in this regard, they probably, you know, things are opening up, and like this guy has a laboratory, so he can start doing more research and studying the brain a little bit deeper. But before this, people would think that mental illness was like a punishment from God, or it was a possession of demons, or something like that. And even when we did the episode on the sleeping sickness, remember, there was people that thought their child were being punished because of something they had done, or something that the child had done, and they were being punished with this sleeping sickness. It's kind of the same thing. If you're having these mental disorders, it was something that you had done. And of course, they didn't realize that there was nothing they could do to cure it per se. So there's some things you're born with that you can't fix. For instance, the lady that I'll talk about later, 1800s and early 1900s, they still thought it was something that was religious, or, and then of course there's the witch trials. A lot of times they would blame something on someone else, that someone gave someone else something that was a mental disorder, made someone else do something that they didn't do themselves. That's kind of crazy. I mean, I think overall it was like 200,000 people that were burned to this on the stake, that were accused of. Yeah, over a period of a certain amount of time during the witch trial era. I think it was like over 200 years.
Yeah, it's like when you don't know the answer, you want to do something. You want to take action in some way, and that kind of relieved that.
Trying
at
to
least
blame.
We're doing something instead of we have no control over anything.
Yeah. In the ancient Mesopotamia era, they had priest doctors that were treating mentally ill with like magic or religious rites, trying to do exorcisms, prayers, atonements on people, incantations, trying to get rid of whatever the illness was. And it was said that the priests would bribe the people that had the mental disorders, or threaten them or punish them in order to get them to be submissive, I guess, to prove that it actually worked, like they were cured. The Chinese believed that the mental illness was also from natural causes, similar to the humors, only it's yin and yang. So mm-hmm. things need to be in balance. So for instance, a remedy for schizophrenia would be to withhold food. That too much positive energy from food would then decrease the positive force in the body that was out of balance. So mm-hmm. they would starve the person for a couple days as a treatment to schizophrenia. as an example. I was reading this in one of the books. With psychopaths that were easy to hide in society because they would be able to kill in war and get that psychopathic urgency to kill out of their system.
That's interesting.
In a way that was acceptable. Yeah, I never thought of that. And then ancient Egypt's also, they considered treatment of behavioral related illnesses to be like recreational, like the treatment would be recreational type activities, like dancing and concerts and painting, like having some type of outlet and trying to get that person to be in a normal, as normal as possible. And that would get them out of whatever mental disorder that they were facing. Which isn't a bad idea, I guess.
Yeah. That sounds nice.
Especially if it's a depression, which is a pretty common mental disorder, I think is probably the most common depression. Mm-hmm. And trying to be as normal as possible might help get you out of your depression. I don't know. It does for me, trying instead of wallowing in whatever depression I'm in.
Yeah. Recreational activities like get you out of yourself. Cause a lot of, like there's cognitive behavioral therapy where you want to get out of your thinking of self, the prefrontal cortex, and activate your limbic system and be a part of something greater. That's what it feels like. It's like if you're in the flow of creating something, you're not thinking about yourself, and that can help. It also, because it's not like you're intentionally trying to be wallowing and thinking of all these terrible thoughts. It's just what is happening. And if you can bring yourself into a different state of mind, it can help you at least have a break from that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. The Middle Ages, there was a concept for diet that could help, like a cooling and diluting diets. They consisted of salads, barley water, milk, but staying away from red meat and wine because they thought red meat and wine were stimulants. The other thing is back in Middle Ages, they didn't have like asylums and for people to go. So either the families took care of them, or they were the ones that were like wandering in the street, the homeless of the Middle Ages. They would just, they didn't have anywhere else to go. But for the most part, they didn't have a place to put them. So the families were supposed to take care of them. The problem with families taking care of the mentally ill was they would end up getting neglected. So you would think, oh, that's nice. They're taking care of them. But it's not like you're taking care of grandma. You're taking care of someone that's a lot of work. So a lot of times they would put them in cages, or they would have them tied up or lock them in a room or things like that, because they couldn't control them, or they just neglected them or didn't give them enough food, or it wasn't as nice as it seems like it would be to be with your family.
Not everybody is either wanting to be a parent or a natural parent, like a nurturing figure. You're going to have those that just are neglectful or whatever. And so, yeah, without the being able to communicate with others, you feel alone partially, you know, that's part, that would be part of it. And then the other side of not knowing what to do. So you just do something that would be inefficient, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. First asylums weren't, well, first the dictionary calls asylum an establishment that existed for the aid and protection of individuals who need assistance due to mental illness, disability, physical handicap, or persons who are not able to take care of themselves, such as the elderly or orphans. That's a pretty broad term, an asylum. That could mean it just about anything. There was some here that were pretty bad. There was one that I believe they called the Seven Teeth, because the one patient killed another patient, cut up her body, put him in different graves nearby, and took seven of her teeth. And so for some reason, that's why they called that facility the Seven Teeth. But what? They, yeah, so the facility.
Why would you want to Okay.
Well, that was the nickname. They didn't call themselves that.
Okay. I was like, negative connotation.
No, they weren't, they didn't name themselves that, but they got the nickname because of this, the murder. And the one patient disappeared. They couldn't find her for a while. And then I guess they figured it out. And then, mm-hmm. yeah. So that was crazy. Some of the first asylums were like a circus act. They would charge people, the public, to come and see the patients that were chained to walls, locked up. And those people that came to see them would laugh at them, would throw things at them. They were on display. Like, they were watching them, the patients, doing their crazy stuff, like talking to themselves or whatever it might be. And I feel like mentally ill are functioning. So what if you do have schizophrenia or you do have some type of hallucinative type of disorder, and they're chaining you to a wall, and the people, and sometimes they're just naked. They don't even have clothing. Uh-huh. And people are coming to see you. I feel like that would make you even more erratic behavior, you know?
Yeah, of course.
It's really sad. And I think there was one guy who's rich, and he was saying in the, after visiting, that it was a humbling experience, and like, and what? Told other people to go and see them.
No. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, ugh. Like, look how good we have it. Go look at these people.
What a weird way to interpret that.
There was some asylums that had padded rooms and straitjackets. There was one facility in the States that was so crowded. They were only supposed to have like 600 beds, but they had over 2000 people. So they definitely had a lot of people to a room. Right. And they were so overpopulated and so understaffed that people would be forgotten, and there'd be people dead and they wouldn't even know them for days. Yeah. Genius. It was supposed to be that when you put your family member in an asylum, that you were to donate money for their care. But a lot of families didn't. They would leave their family member there. And then that was it. They didn't have any more contact with them. Didn't visit, didn't give money. So these facilities were underfunded. So there wasn't proper food. They would never have linens changed. Their beds were of straw. They would have, like I said, the clothing would be, they wouldn't get new clothing. They wouldn't even get laundry done. So they'd be in the same thing forever. The facilities might not even have working water. So there might be a well or one well outside. And thus they wouldn't bring fresh water in all day long for all these people. A lot of them were just malnutritioned, malnourished.
Yeah.
Some of the doctors would say they were trying to purge them from their mental disorder. So not having enough food was like, oh, we're fixing them and we're saving money because we don't have to feed them.
Ugh.
Which is, I feel like, a made up treatment.
Yeah.
Then there's those asylums where they start doing experimentation. One was Dr. Henry Cotton, who, for some freaking crazy reason, thought after he'd heard that syphilis was caused by a bacteria, that somehow mental illness was a infection. Therefore, he connected that if he takes out their teeth, that would cure them of their mental disorder. I don't know the connection, and maybe if I read a documentary or a bio on Dr. Cotton, I would understand how he connected teeth to infection, and I'll probably do that someday. I've heard of him before. I just have never studied him, but that was his thing, is he would take out their teeth. He started removing their teeth. Even if the x-ray didn't show an infection, he also would start taking out things like gallbladders, ovaries, stomachs, testicles, uterus, all kinds of different things, thinking that he was treating illness, mental illness. Yeah. I don't know how taking out your gallbladder helps with mental disorder.
But I have no idea, unless there's like notes or something, like some theory.
Well, which I don't know how it's connected. I honestly, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what this does.
It's a stretch.
Let me see. Like for the teeth thing, I'm like, okay, we have holes in different parts of our body. That's the only thing that's like, that's sticking out. You could take out and there's bacteria around there. You know, like, I don't, that's the only thing I got. I have.
Yeah, I don't. And this was around 1907 mm-hmm. is when he started doing this. So it wasn't like that long ago. It's just, I mean, it's still about 100 years ago, but mm-hmm. it was still within the last century that this guy was,
and that was over here.
Yeah, that was in New Jersey. New Jersey State Lunatic Asylum, which was founded by Dorothea Dix. So he claimed that he cured 85% of his patients, which is true if you don't count the people that died.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just to be able to throw out some statistics. I don't know. Like, I think I've cured, like, I don't know, 90% of the people.
I've cured 85% that lived.
Yeah. Asterisk. You know, like 85%.
Well, there was
asterisk.
Actually a high mortality rate. Anyway, most often there was no consent. He would take out whatever without consent.
Yeah.
And then he published all these findings and stuff. But he...
Ugh, that sucks. Anybody who has an idea, like, you can't be worse than some of these people. Like, just go for it.
You know? I mean, who's going to complain, especially if the families ignore them or they just drop them off or whatever and just they don't
feel
them, because they didn't even get family, you know, family consent or anything like that. And yeah. So he remained there until 1930, but they were still doing the practice of pulling teeth until 1960.
What? 1960?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I don't know. Like I said, he's one I should add to my list to research more, because that somehow is very interesting. Like, I want to know his thought process and the thought process of everyone who kept letting him do it.
Well, do you know that story about the a daughter is watching her mom cook a meal, and she cut, and it's like a pig, and she cuts the legs off the pig. Do you know that? That's this little story. Okay. So she cuts off the legs of the pig, and the pig's dead. All right. So she's just cooking some pot, right? Pig's dead. And so she cuts off the legs and she puts them in the pan, and the daughter asks, "Why do you cut off the legs?" And she's like, "Oh, I don't know. I learned this from my mom." And so they call the grandma and they say, "Hey, I'm cooking this recipe and I cut off the legs. Why do we do that?" And she's like, "I don't know. I just saw my mom do it." So they call their great grandmother, because they're fortunate enough to have her around. And the great grandmother says, "Oh, I just did that because that's how it fit into the pan." So they had been doing this thing, this recipe that had no effect on the recipe. It was because they had just learned and they never asked questions.
So I've heard that story, but not like that. I've heard it in a different version. Yeah, but the pig leg, that's a good one. That's a good.
Yeah, thank you. I try.
It's a good analogy. There was another hospital, the Topeka State Hospital in Kansas. They also treated patients very poorly. There was a reporter that came to visit, and he found that one of the patients had been restrained with chains so long that the skin started growing over the shackles.
Oh my goodness. Oh
yeah, that's pretty sad. Not even like loosened to take baths or anything. They were just,
jeez.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And they also reported that people were just, they had no activities to do. Like in Nellie Bly's story, people didn't have anything else to do either, but in this case they didn't either. So they were just had rocking chairs, and they just were in rocking chairs all day.
Yeah.
That was 1948. And then, of course, there are other things that asylums would treat the Well, back in those other stories, it didn't seem like they were treating anybody at all. They were just housing them and not even taking care of them, let alone treating their illnesses. Except for Cotton, he was trying to treat them by taking out their teeth. So he's trying to do something. But then, of course, there's lobotomy, which is where they drill holes on the, usually the temple. And then they would go in with these little spatula thingies and sever the nerve from the prefrontal lobe. Lobotomy was to correct mental illness, but a lot of times it made it worse than it helped. The prefrontal lobe is the lobe in the front of the brain. Mm-hmm. And it's known for the management of behavior. So they thought by removing that damaged area that the person would return to their normal self. Of course, if they were never normal, they were never, that wouldn't really work either. But it would usually result in a complete, just lost their personality. It also could affect their speech. The doctors would do it if they were trying to correct violent behavior, or they would use it on psychotic or schizophrenic patients. But a lot of times they were just doing experiments, do it on people that didn't have those things. They would have they would do it with no anesthesia, and they would do it like, so the patient would be talking or reciting poems or something while they were cutting the brain. And then they would stop once the patient stopped talking. Then they knew they had disconnected enough or whatever. Yeah. And all with that anesthesia. So sometimes they would have to hold them down, or they would have to cut their hair. And the doctors that did this, Dr. Friedman was the one that was doing lobotomies. He said one time that the patients were always upset when they found out they had to get their hair shaved. And he's like, I don't know why they're upset, because after the procedure is over, they're going to be so calm, they won't even care, which is so ridiculously sad. Like, don't worry about it. In 10 minutes, you're not going to care that you have no hair.
Yeah.
It's sad. Other way that they would treat the disorders are with electroshock therapy. And that's another one that could go terribly wrong as well. The electroshock, depending on the settings, could be either really disastrous or helpful. I mean, it has been known to help wake them up from whatever stupor they were in or something like that. But it's not going to help someone who's mentally handicapped, not someone who's born that way. Mm-hmm. It's not going to fix anything. But again, the amount of shock is something that could be very cruel. And they would use that a lot on people who were sexual deviants or someone that was violent.
Yeah, that's been up to recently. It wasn't that long ago that they stopped doing electric.
Yeah.
I think hasn't that been even later for homosexuality?
Yes. That was another treatment that they would try to correct that type of, they thought it was, also a mental disorder. So they would try to correct the homosexuality. Remember when we were talking in the Nellie Bly episode about regulations? It wasn't until about the 1960s that things were really being regulated. And that was in the late 1960s is also like the time of free love. Like, that's when the hippie concept was strong. And so the concept for human rights for all was a little bit stronger. And the people were trying to get better treatment for everybody, including the mentally disabled. So finally, state facilities and asylums were getting inspected properly and getting better humane treatment. nowadays they treat patients with drugs and therapy. And there's over 100 different types of medication that are used for people with mental illness. And there's two different categories. There's antidepressants and there's antipsychotics. And some professionals will diagnose a person and they might be a general practitioner. They may not have ever been trained in psychology. There might not be a psychologist. In the hospital, a lot of times, if a patient's already got mental diagnosis, they need adjustment with their medications or something like that. Or if they feel like it's a new diagnosis, they will get a consult for a psychiatrist. And they can come in and they actually do spend quite a bit of time with the patient. Some of these medications, which are supposed to be like, for instance, there's some medications for suicidal thoughts. But one of the side effects is suicidal thoughts.
Yeah.
And they're a little scary. They're a little scary.
Yeah.
But also the important thing is for therapy as well, to get therapy alongside of medications. And I think that's something that's much different than the old asylums, is having those therapy sessions.
Yeah.
Where obviously in Nellie Bly's time, they may have had doctors, but they sure weren't treating them therapeutically.
Yeah.
They're just asking them questions that were just confirming that they thought they were mentally ill, but not helping that patient to get better at all. There should be some type of, when you go to get your physical every year, or there should be a mental aspect to that physical. So I've only been ever asked about my mental health once, and that was because of a medication, and they were asking me how I was doing mentally. Have I been depressed? Have I been having any suicidal thoughts? And that was like the only time I've ever been asked that. And I was like, actually, no, I'm doing pretty well despite the medication. So, but that should be a part of a regular physical.
Yeah, I think it's like imaging has come so far so that, yeah, like, of course they have, or at least some places have these resources where they're like, yeah, let's contact this specialist. But for the mental image, like, they are trying to do like more brain scans and stuff and like see where, what kind of activity, and try to have more explanation. But we're not as far advanced as we are for the other, like CT scans and stuff. And, you can't even, even if you get prescribed medication, there's no guidelines yet on how much a person needs. They have to guess. And that's for a lot of, it doesn't matter what you have. If it's antibiotics, they're like, maybe this amount of antibiotics, anything that we kind of ingest in our body. It's like, I think with antibiotics, it'd be a lot more specific, but there's other ones where I'm like, this just varies.
Well, with antibiotics, there's one antibiotic that I know for sure they know when it's a therapeutic. It's vancomycin. And they could do a blood work on that to see where it's, when it's in therapeutic range. However, I know what you're talking about. There's a lot of guessing work with how much, but everybody's different. Just like,
yeah, everybody's different. And then you would have to create a relationship with that person who's prescribing you medication to know, like, how, because there are times, like, even I that's why I researched. I try to go prepared. Not a lot of people can do that. I have time, but even if I do that, it doesn't mean I'm actually going to have the right information available. So, I need to be able to trust that person, feel comfortable to be able to communicate. If that is a situation for me where I'm going to be prescribed medication, and then kind of like, how is it affecting me? What changes? And then you have to know yourself too. And most of these people, like, if you are not knowing how you really are from day to day, which I have a terrible memory, and I'm like, I second guess myself. I'm like, wait, did I feel like this the other day?
I was going to say so in today's world, I think we've talked about this before, that there is a better, well, the conversation is opening up a little bit better, where people are talking about mental disorders, and it's not a, because if you, someone told you that you had depression even, or bipolar or something like that, people tend to turn away. And I don't think that's as much the case anymore. I think mm-hmm. people are more understanding of mental disorder and knowing that it's not like some scary thing, and that someone is still a good person, even if they have a mental illness. Mm-hmm. I think it's improving, and there's a lot of different ways to deal with it nowadays. There's counseling, and there's even like an app or something now where you can get a counselor and just talk to someone.
Yeah, there's a few different services like that that are like, I haven't used one, but I know, you know, once my insurance kicks in for the new insurance I got next year, I'm like, I'm going to do it. I'm like, I like reading about this stuff. I like understanding myself. I already spend time, but even I, you know how, like, it's just beneficial to be able to.
Well, they have advertisements all the time on some of the podcasts that I listen to. I think that's a good resource for people, especially this year. Okay, so the person that I wanted to tell the story about that kind of relates is named Rosemary Kennedy. Rosemary Kennedy was not poor. She came from a very prominent family, the Kennedys, from Massachusetts. The sister of JFK, a former president. She was one of nine children, the first girl in the family. We're going to talk about her. And I know you've heard of her before.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I had never heard of her before. I came across her name recently and then started looking more into her, and then read a book about her, two books actually, about her story, because I needed to know more. It was just a fascinating story because the family did a really good job of hiding her. And I'd never heard of her before. Rosemary Kennedy, when she was born, was held in her mother's, not even the womb, because she'd already been crowning. She was held back from being born for 2 hours. The doctor was held up because at the time that she was born, which was 1918, I believe, was during the time of the Spanish flu. So the Spanish flu was taking up a lot of the doctor's time, and so he was late. The nurse, who had been a nurse in the OB world for a long time, knew how to deliver a baby, but didn't. It could be because the doctor doesn't get paid if he's not there for the delivery, even for the prenatal care, which is crazy, but that's the reality back then. But they held the baby in for 2 hours. At first, the nurse told her to close her leg so the baby wouldn't be born. And then she just ended up putting her hand up in there when the baby was crowning to hold the baby in. That's a long time without oxygen. The baby was born. The family didn't realize there was anything wrong till she was delayed in her functional skills, like crawling and walking and even holding a baby spoon, talking. All of those things were late. But this was the first girl, and her mother, whose name is Rose Kennedy, she didn't realize. She was just thinking it was a gender thing, that her first two children were boys, and thought, well, they did everything quickly, but it's probably just a girl thing. As she got older, she realized something was different. The next child to be born after her advanced pretty quickly. So they kind of knew something was different. The mother, she was very good at cataloging all the children's health records. She even weighed them in every week and would manage their diet through the week. If they had lost weight, she would adjust the diet. She had nine children. So yeah, it kept her pretty busy, and the children were pretty active. They played a lot together. They're very competitive. But Rosemary, she just couldn't quite keep up with her other brothers and sisters. She wouldn't be able to do things like steer a sled. her mom tried really hard to teach her things like tennis. She tried to normalize her as much as possible. She spent a lot of time with her trying to catch her up. I don't think she realized that wasn't something that was ever going to happen, but she tried all of her life. Well, all of her childhood, mm-hmm. even intellectually, she was trying to get her to be better. They did send her to kindergarten, and they were just hoping the teachers would be able to help catch her up. But there weren't really many options for someone like her. So they did take her to kindergarten, and she could go as far as she could. Like she was maybe dyslexic. She would write from right to left instead of left to right. And so they think maybe she was a little dyslexic. She wrote like a little kid. Like she had this printing online. Her printing is like very childlike. Her spelling is very childlike. Even when she was in her 20s, she wrote like a 10-year-old. They wanted their Kennedy children to be the best that they could be. And, yeah. and they didn't want to treat her differently. And it wasn't like they punished her for being that way. They just tried harder. And she was so wanting to please her parents. She really adored her dad and was always, when she would be sent, she got sent off to boarding schools. She's always sending letters to her dad and wanting to show, saying she wanted to please him. So she was trying really hard. But like I said, it was, nothing, it wasn't her fault. But they didn't know any better. The parents did try as best they could to treat her like the other kids and protecting her. And the other thing was if she got frustrated, she would end up having seizures. They call them fits, but they think it was seizures. Mm-hmm. That when she'd get frustrated, or she just couldn't do it because she was really trying to be like her brothers and sisters, but she just didn't have the dexterity. The mother, Rose, tried to teach her to be as normal as she could be so the neighbors wouldn't find out. And it was important because they were in the public eye. They, like I say, were very wealthy. And they wanted to make sure, as a public face, it seemed like she was normal. Most of the time, the friends and stuff of the kids kind of knew she was off. She was a charming kid. They said she was pleasant, but she just, like I said, would get frustrated. She couldn't cut her meat. So when she would be fed, because they had money, they had cooks and nannies and all these to help her. She would have her food cut for her. She was kind of labeled as a moron. They had, these are the labels they had back then. Idiot was a toddler, 2 years or younger. An imbecile was a 3 to 8 year old. Like that's your mental status. Or a moron was 8 to 12.
Oh, nice. I never knew where those came from. I just used them.
Yeah. So I guess she'd be considered a moron because she was kind of stuck in as a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. So the parents took her back out of kindergarten. She wasn't advancing. They got her tutors and tried to help get her again to be improved. That wasn't exactly working, but they ended up taking her to boarding school later. That was hard on her because she was taking her out of an environment. She'd get used to an environment and then they would take her out of it. And the boarding school, you don't get to come home very much until holidays and things like that. Or summer vacations. And so that was really hard for her as an adjustment. So at first she'd have a really hard time adjusting. She'd act out a little bit, but then once she'd get settled, she'd get into a routine and these schools that they were sending to her to, they were boarding schools, but they were, you know, more specialized towards special needs, the mother started researching and talking to universities about her daughter and what was going on, what was best for her. And actually the father too. The father was very business oriented. He was making a name for himself, but he was very involved in where they sent her because he did want the best for his kid. He also wanted to make sure she improved so they wouldn't embarrass the family. Mm-hmm. Because of that stigma, they didn't want other people knowing. So it was important that she get fixed. So at 11, she went to her first boarding school, and they did work on her, and they were doing really well. They said that she had low self-esteem and low confidence, and those things would make her frustrated. But she really did try to put in an effort, but they wouldn't let her go home. So it was really hard on her. And then she was there for a while, but then she wasn't improving. Like, she got as far as she could go. She was not good at math. And again, she wasn't good at writing. And they said her attention span was pretty much just a couple hours. And then she was kind of done for the day. Another school had figured that out. And then they would have her do crafts and stuff after in the afternoon and then kind of practice what she might have learned by having a conversation. But let's see. Then when she was 16, she went to yet another school, but she was at the third or fourth grade level. And she just, like I said, she would get moody in the beginning and then she would act out. And then she started to really, then she would get comfortable with people. And that was hard because when she got taken away, because she was a 10-year-old, she formed these attachments, and then she wrote a lot of letters, and she wrote letters to the people that she had known before at other schools, or she'd write to her family all the time asking, she was really close to one of her sisters, asking her to write her long letters and writing letters to her mom and dad. She was a very social person. She loved socializing and she loved fashion and beauty. And if somebody complimented her, they said that she would be smiling for hours after that. She sounded like a really sweet person. Yeah. She was very pretty too. She was very pretty. There's pictures of her. She's just really gorgeous. She got to wear a really pretty dress when she met the queen. Like, she loved that kind of stuff. She loved dressing up. Mm-hmm. The other thing people would say was she was real lovable and just very sweet. Then there was a certain point where, I mean, her dad was constantly trying to figure out a cure, but he had her start seeing an endocrinologist, which treats hormones, thinking that it was a hormonal imbalance. So they would give her shots 3 times a week, trying to fix her. And at first he was saying, yeah, she's improving. Just 8 more months of this. I think he was just leading the parents on. They finally ended up putting her in another school that was closer to home. And they moved a lot, and they were in Boston or Massachusetts. And then he had a job in New York. They would move back and forth. They even lived in the UK briefly before the war. He became an ambassador mm-hmm. at some point. And so they lived in the UK, where she went to a convent, and she was doing really, really well there. They were teaching her how to be a teacher's aide, and she really loved it. And she really enjoyed teaching the little kids. And her dad wanted to keep her there, except they ended up having to pull her out when the war, you know, was getting too close, and they were doing the raids and stuff. So they had to bring her back home, sadly. So they put her in a convent that was near there, and that didn't go so well because it wasn't exactly like the one in the UK. Mm-hmm. The father, by the way, he was in the stock market. He did insider trading. He was part of the problem that caused the Great Depression. Mm. So when the Great Depression hit, and millions of people were suffering, like this year, where people have lost jobs and there's, you know, a lot of changes. He came out really well because he sold high before he got out, mm-hmm. and was even more rich during the Depression.
Yeah.
Sadly. And because of that, later on, they put him over the SEC, which regulates, which it became a new division for the government. They put him over regulations for the stock market.
What?
I know.
Okay.
I thought, okay. And the president had said, well, who better to overlook regulation than someone who
abused it?
Yes. Exactly. So
someone who knew how to game the system.
That's how like they hire hackers mm-hmm. to fix your system, because who better to fix your firewall system than a hacker who knows how to get through it, right? Yeah. Or yeah. Yeah. Yep. So anyway, that was a little infuriating when I read that.
Yeah.
So she did really well in the UK, like I said, and at this point she was starting to be looked at by boys, mm-hmm. and she was really developing as a teenager, and she's in her late teens and whatnot. But when she got back to the States, she was put in this other covenant, but they would go to dances and stuff, but her family had her brothers take her to dances. And so she was dancing with her brothers or her brother's friends. They wouldn't let her be by herself or to date or anything like that, because she was not to be trusted, and they didn't want people to know what she really was like, right? So she constantly had companions, and her other sisters she was the oldest girl, but her sisters that are younger than her, they're going off to all these dates and they're doing things on their own that she's not allowed to. And that was frustrating for her too. So she used to sneak out of, they said she wandered a lot. She would wander out of the convent and be found on the street at 2 a.m. She was going home. She would go to bars or she would go places, and she was going home with men.
Oh.
Yeah. Because she's, you know, like that was, she was never alone. So she was trying to live a life, you know, have a life. But the problem is she's not mentally able to understand the consequences or of what a grown man is trying to get out of her.
Yeah. You know?
Because she's still in a 10-year-old's mind. She's this sweet, innocent person who also has these hormones going, knowing that, you know, she wants to, she's realizing boys are looking at her. Yeah, so she was going home with guys, and I'm assuming she was doing things with them. Don't know. This was around, she was like 22 at this point when she was sneaking out and doing this kinds of stuff. And her dad, who, like I said, she wanted to please, was... he found out about this Dr. Freeman, who we just talked about, who was doing lobotomies. And this was still new. He'd only done about 80 lobotomies before. And he was talking to his wife about it. His wife and one of the daughters, Eunice is the sister that she was close to. She looked him up and found that these lobotomies weren't all that successful. That once they were done, the person was never the same, and mm-hmm. said, no, we shouldn't do this to Rosemary. However, her dad took her to get it done anyway, mm-hmm. and it did not consult. Like, Rose, the mom knew, but didn't say, you know, didn't get permission. Didn't get permission from Rosemary. May have said, you know, this is going to help you stay calm. Nobody knows the conversation that he had with her. It's just known that Rosemary did want to please her dad and was trying to make her proud. So, I mean, that was her mentality with her dad. Yeah. Was all, and loved spending time with him and things like that. So either way, he took her to get it done, and they did it the same day he met Dr. Freeman. He did the lobotomy. She was singing during it. Again, no anesthesia. Shaved her hair. He said she didn't want her hair shaved, liked her curls. And they found out within a few hours something was wrong. So she wasn't able to talk anymore. She wasn't able to walk anymore. Almost paralyzed. They changed her. She was she was a lot more subdued, I guess. The father didn't tell the mother exactly what happened. It sounded like he had lied. Some of the letters that he wrote was like, oh, she's doing really well. Knew she was in the hospital. Now, the thing is, I'm pretty sure the mother knew. But she didn't know something had gone wrong. Because she knew he was talking about brain surgery, but he didn't tell anybody what had happened, that now she needed full care, like for the rest of her life. And so he barely ever saw her. She went from one place to another. I think she was in one place for 7 years. And then she went to another facility. He built her a little cottage on property. I mean, he had a lot of money, so he was constantly doing that with all the schools. Like, there was one school that he made sure they had a phone, so he put in a phone system in their facility, things like that. So he, and he also had a trust that would take care of her for the rest of his her life, but he did get her a cottage. There was nuns there that took care of her, so she had a couple of people taking care of her around the clock that stayed in the cottage. And they would try to keep the reporters away because she was in the spotlight before. Like, she'd been in, she was part of the Kennedy royalty. They just didn't realize that she was delayed. So they were trying to see why she was there, find out more information but they kept it a secret for decades. He had a stroke like 20 years later. And then, like, the mom never visited her. The mom never came to see her, probably because Joe told her not to, or I don't know the case. But
I don't know. It seems like maybe it would be too depressing or too much guilt that she let it happen, because she sounded like a very in-depth mom.
She was very controlling, very, very controlling. But she didn't come to visit her. The father had came to visit her for a few times, but then he stopped. The public, they told, it was she was working at a school to help the mentally ill. I guess the mother would write letters to the kids weekly, but she never talked about Rosemary. She would tell everybody what was going on with the other children. And at this point, they're a lot older. You know, the father had groomed some of them for politics. But in the course of that, three sons actually died. One son, the oldest, had died in World War II? World War II. And the other son obviously was the president, and he was assassinated. And then Bobby was assassinated. And they said that Rosemary found out from the television.
Wow.
But at the end, she lived to be 86. She could say some words. They said she knew a handful of words. She could do some short sentences, like very short. She had a dog. They built her a pool. But once her father had a stroke, that's when the family started to visit. That's when the family started to go out and see her. Like Jack, JFK, he was a senator at the time, and there was a bill that was going to be, he was working on, that he didn't pass or didn't get on board with. But as soon as he visited his sister and found out what happened, then everything changed. He started fighting for mental health rights. He passed a law while he was president that helped. It was like the precursor to the Disability Act. And his sister Eunice, she ended up being a strong advocate for mentally disabled people. She even started the Special Olympics. But it wasn't until the father had the stroke and then had died later that anybody knew anything that was going on.
Yeah, you're right about, like, because I was like, oh, I don't know about that. But then it's like about the why they didn't visit. And then that sounds like a good theory is that they didn't visit because of the dad saying not to, and they right. all respect and obey their dad. And
yeah, because when Jack went to visit, he didn't tell anybody. It was a secret trip.
Yeah.
And I think because maybe he started to wonder what was going on, or because they all were pretty close before. They all took care of her in some way because they were all protecting her. They were all had her in the, like, her best interest. They were all trying to protect her. Yeah. And so all of a sudden she's gone. She's just gone. Yeah.
If family was so important, like, as like being in the, like, to narrate a story or have control over the story, then family is so important. It was like, even if they didn't, I don't know. I guess I'm just generalizing, but it's like, they, luckily the kids did have a heart and want to take care of them. It sucks that it had to happen to somebody wealthy and privileged, you know, like in many different ways for there to be changes. Because in the beginning of your story, I was like when they're trying to see different doctors or trying to whatever, whenever I take my son to a doctor, any doctor or anything related to him, teacher, I don't know, anything, right? If they're going to be seeing him, they, on the forms, there's always, even he's 4 years old, whatever, there's always, how was his birth? Like, was it unusual? Was there anything that happened? And like, so this whole time, like, I was like, why, you know, to try hormones, or like, when did they finally say, hey, was there anything unusual about her birth? And like, now it's every form, no matter what he's being seen for, it's like, hey, how was his birth? You know, like, I have to answer every time.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Cause I mean, I don't have kids, so they don't, nobody asks me to do those things.
Yeah.
But, the reason, this is also something that infuriates me. The father was, the reason he did it wasn't because she was being promiscuous. I mean, okay, she might have been promiscuous and she was acting out a little bit, like if she would get frustrated. She's a grown woman, so when she has a tantrum, she's hurting somebody or hitting somebody. It's going to hurt because she's 20 something, not 10. Mm-hmm. That's different than he did it because he was embarrassed. She was ruining the reputation of the family. And here he was grooming his sons for politics. And so he didn't want to ruin. So that's why he did it. He was trying to cure her. And of course he didn't know the outcome was going to be, you know, what it happened. And I'm sure that guilt riddled him for the rest of his life, I hope. But it was just sad that was, like, it was so stigmatized. It's one thing hiding your kid. It's another to take away their personality.
Yeah.
And that's what's infuriating. And the guy was not the greatest guy anyway. He had a string of mistresses. A lot of them famous actresses. And I think Rose knew, she knew, but because of her status being this rich, like, American royalty family, she kind of had to just look the other way. And she focused a lot on her children, and she could have whatever she wanted because he was rich. But this guy wasn't the greatest, but he did try really hard with what knowledge he knew to help his daughter in the first place with getting her one school after another. And, but they were also, like, even Rose, so back to her mother, she was very controlling. And so after the mother had come to visit her, the first time that she came to visit the Rosemary, they said Rosemary recoiled from her. And, lashed out at her. And I'm not sure why. Maybe she realized that her mother had not come to see her in 20 something years or however long it was. And so her mother was kind of reluctant to come visit again, but she did. And then she started having her come visit twice a year to the family home, which I thought was really nice. She was able to do that. At this point, she was walking. I think she needed assistance walking, but she was able to do some walking because they did daily walks. But she got to the point where she wanted the nuns to tell her her daily routine. She wanted to know what was happening at all times of the day. Like, she was controlling everything, and she telling her her mother was obsessed with weight. Like I told you before, she was weighing all the kids every single week and was obsessed with them. She didn't, because they were in the public eye, and wanted to make sure nobody was overweight or underweight. So obsessed. So here she is back in her life and controlling her again, which I thought was really sad. It was just, yeah. They did build her a pool at this facility so she could have exercise. So she had that too. And her mom wanted to make sure she was swimming every day, even in the cold, to make sure she's wearing a warm coat to get there. She'll be all right. Very controlling mother. The mother died at 104.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's something too nagging.
I guess. But she, Rosemary lived to 87 or 86, something like that. So anyway, it's an interesting story, and they did a really good job of hiding her and hiding her illness. But once it was out, once he became, her brother became president, they did admit, yes, they have a sister that's mentally retarded, but they still never mentioned the lobotomy. That didn't come out till even later. So that's the story of Rosemary Kennedy.
No.
Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, it was a downer when you, like, the another downer. at the beginning, like, just, oh, how terrible. I was like, the holding for 2 hours for breathing, it's like, oh my goodness, like,
yeah, that's, they didn't know any better.
It's just so, yeah, and I guess, yeah, like, they didn't know any better. It's just so infuriating and sad and tragic. It just sucks that, like I said, for all these changes, like, everybody has worth, and it sucks that for things to change, it needs to get into the spotlight somehow, and the fastest way is to
have a martyr.
And have a celebrity.
Yeah,
or somebody of celebrity status, like, whether it's like for their genius, for their work ethic, or whatever, somebody with a ton of money,
and it might not have worked prior. So growing up, I mean, they still were trying to make something of themselves, make a name for themselves. So what if she was brought to the spotlight earlier on?
May
not have been helpful. Like, there might have been such a stigma that he may not have become president, that it might have been, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know.
Yeah, I getcha.
Anyway, well, that was a fun New Year's Eve. Thanks for joining me again on this episode.
Me?
Yes, okay. You.
I enjoyed it.
Very interesting. Catch you in the next episode.
Yeah. Bye. Have a good new year. Or yeah, it's gonna be in 2021's better year, right?
Oh, it better be.
Right. I think so.
All right.
All right. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's mental vacation from your current life. If you did, and are curious for more, please subscribe. Before you go, if you have anything to add to today's show, or you have a topic that you think is worthy of dissection, please reach out on dissectingmedicalhistory.com or Instagram on dissectingmedicalhistory. Thank you, and stay curious.